There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
So there are five brain centers. Each produces a single chemical. So there are 20 amino acids in food. We're talking about five. They are capable of restoring 100% of our capacity for positive moods, 100% of our ability to choose healthful foods. Without adequate amounts of serotonin, we are desperately looking for something. And we're looking for it from food. First time in the human race, we had voluntarily limited our intake of basic nutrients, mistakenly guided by the government, which was guided by a few individuals, academics in the nutrition field, who had theories. So we turned to grains and sugars, the high carb foods. And then there was another factor. This is something that as spiritually oriented people, we have to struggle with, and that is we were introduced to vegetarian and vegan diets, tremendous battlefield that nutrition has become. Most of the people alive right now are too young to have experienced the fact that we didn't have mood problems significantly, and we didn't have.
Welcome to the Inspired Evolution. I'm your humble host, Amrit Sandhu, and you're tuning in to a conscious conversation designed to help you grow. Our mission here is simple. It's for you to live your purpose, live your best life, live the life you love. This podcast is sponsored by Enthusiasm for Life, by Great Creation itself. To keep the good vibes flowing for myself and yourself, do us a solid, subscribe to the Inspired Evolution podcast on YouTube. The home of the Inspired Evolution podcast. Now sit back, relax, open your mind, open your heart to this conversation, and stay inspired. Keep evolving. Our food sources have been incredibly corrupted, touch wood, in modern times, basically leaving our brain devoid of certain chemicals that we absolutely need to not just survive, but also thrive. This conversation is highly profound. It's for your mental wellness. It's for your food addictions. It's for your craving and how to cure that. So many cures come back to the way that food is ultimately our medicine, and it is currently jeopardized. So check out this conversation if you really want to help cure your mood, whether you've got cravings for alcohol or drugs, or even got cravings for certain foods. Sugar is right up there with it. But also if you're struggling to find a solid footing when it comes to dieting and really what you should be eating for yourself. This is an incredibly profound conversation. We dive into many deep rabbit holes where ultimately food is thy medicine. Food is thy medicine, but intuitively we cannot feel into which foods really are our medicine. And why is that so? Well, food has been heavily corrupted in its modern production processes. We've got a lot of challenges when it comes to that. So this conversation helps us unpick and find a path forward in terms of how we can nutritionally support ourselves going forward so that we can actually live a really well-balanced life and come home to a place where we can actually just dive back into intuitive eating, make correct choices for our body types. It's an incredible conversation, helping us reconcile nutrition and wellness so that ultimately we can live our best lives. As always, guys, I invite you to subscribe to the channel. It helps so much more than I can say. Like and comment on the video. Today's episode. Welcome back to the Inspired Evolution. And we have with us, welcome her back, inspiring our evolution, Julia Ross. Julia, how are you there?
I'm fine. I'm glad to be back.
Oh my God. It is such a treat for all of us to have you back. For those that have tuned into the previous episode, wow, it has been so incredibly well received. We covered so much ground on mood and curing the mood. For those that are tuning into Julia Ross for the first time, she is a trailblazer in nutritional psychology. She's the author of The Mood Cure, The Craving Cure, The Diet Cure. If you're looking in on screen via video, you can see the front cover of the Craving Cure just there. And her work has been revolutionary, to say the least, in how we treat mood disorders, cravings, and weight issues using amino acids. She challenges several mainstream health paradigms and where they come in. And we're going to discuss more about where some of those paradigms drop in from and what are some of the intentions and incentives behind those dropping in, promoting ultimately through Julia's work, natural solutions for holistic well-being. Julia, thank you so much for being here.
I'm delighted.
So I wanted to tune in. Last time we had our conversation, we were circling around five amino acids. Did you want to highlight again around the mood cure what those five amino acids were so we can take our conversation further?
Well, the last time we talked about the parts of the brain, and there are five of them, that program our moods pretty thoroughly. It turns out, though, that the same five areas of the brain also program our appetite for food. And so that's what we want to talk about today, because the impact of modern day deficiency in those five parts of the brain that should be programming us to reach for the healthiest food on the planet. Instead, because of deficiency, because of the drug-like effects of commercial foods that most of the world is subsisting on now, those five areas are crippled. They can't direct us properly to the kinds of foods that prior to the 1970s had kept us at a healthy weight, a healthy mood, and in health generally. And at this point, you know, we've lost our ability to generate normal moods. We've lost our way in terms of how to eat. And we've lost our health. You know, in the United States, we have 50% diabetes rates. And in China and India, it's 70 and 80%. This is unheard of. Diabetes was almost unknown up to the 1970s.
And the proposition is that we can cure some of these widespread health epidemics with similar amino acids that help us cure our mood. I find this really remarkable because on one hand, we've got mood all the way over here in one camp, and then we've got health concerns all the way over here in a whole nother satellite other camp. And then hearkening into your work, it's like, outwardly, these are such disparate fields, but when you come back in, the treatment is one and the same. That fascinates me deeply. What are the five parts of the brain and what are the five amino acids? Let's start there, and then maybe we can talk about some of the greater calamities. Let's start with the solution and then discuss the problems.
And let's just fast forward to let people know that this is a very simple process. The nutrients involved are very potent, but they're available, you know, any place online or in stores that handles nutritional supplements. And they're not expensive. And they don't have to be taken long term. And this is something that I didn't mention the last time that I want to make sure people understand, is they are capable of restoring 100% of our capacity for positive moods, 100% of our ability to choose healthful foods. And I can't give a percentage of our improved health based on it, but inevitably, our health in general is improved tremendously by the rehabilitation of these five brain centers. So there are five brain centers. Each produces a single chemical out of very simple nutrients called amino acids. So there are 20 amino acids in food, and we're talking about five to restore our mood, our diet, and our health all at once. And it's not too much to expect. And the people that have been remarking on our first conversation are refreshingly open to this. You know, many other audiences just don't believe it. It's too good to be true. So let's get right to the five areas of the brain that are the problem. And then we'll get to how we can very simply correct those areas that are malfunctioning. So I always start with the area of the brain that seems to be most malfunctioning for most people at this time. It depends on a nutrient that's kind of hard to find unless you're eating lots of protein three times a day. So we'll get to what specific protein we need and how it's not readily available. We have to eat lots of protein in order to get a little bit of this one nutrient that fuels serotonin, which is our natural sunshine, you know, our inner light. And in terms of mood, we talked about how it allows us to be at peace instead of worried, optimistic instead of pessimistic. There are many mood, able to sleep instead of suffering from insomnia. The range of benefits of this particular neurotransmitter called serotonin is wide, but we're just going to focus today on the effect on our appetite. So without adequate amounts of serotonin, we are desperately looking for something to improve our mood. And we're looking for it from food. And what we find these days is that there are foods, I call them technocarbs, because they're not really nutrients. They're actually 60% nutrient void. So I'm talking about candy and chips and, you know, the junk food that we've been seduced into making our primary source of nutrition.
I do jest sometimes that some of this stuff is just as nutritionally dense as the packaging it comes in. I know that's intense for me to say that. It is in jest, but it is also, it paints a point.
Yes. There's no question that eating the packaging might give us equal amount of nutrients. But it would not be more enjoyable because the contents are really being designed to have a drug-like effect. So they have no nutritional value, but they do have a drug-like effect on these five centers. And the center we're talking about right now is the center that wakes us up in the morning, eager to meet the day. It optimizes around noon. The brain is generating, in a healthy brain, plenty of this inner light. Around noon, it's at its height. And then in the afternoon and evening, it starts to drop because it's dependent on light in part to be activated. And as it fades into the evening and all night, the levels are very low. And those are the times that people who are low in this first neurotransmitter that should be programming perfect appetite and mood, those are the times of the day where they lose their way in terms of cravings, where they start wanting sugar in particular. And so late afternoon, evening, bedtime. The darker times of the day are the times where we start craving these particular drug foods that target this one part of the brain, the serotonin-producing part of the brain.
Can I just jump in there for a sec? Might it be also the fact that we've got artificial light and that we're trying to basically push the body into spending time awake in the artificial light that we're actually craving some of these sugars to get us the energy to sort of move through? Or is that, am I conflating some ideas that shouldn't be conflated?
Well, you know, there's a lot of conversation about blue light, which is the daytime light, but it doesn't have the intensity and proper impact on the brain, so that there's light, but it's just confusing matters and does not alert us that we need healthy food.
Yeah. Definitely. Sorry, I've digressed. Please continue. Yeah.
That's right. So during those dark times of the day, let's assume that we haven't been eating well for some time, if ever, at this point. We definitely don't have the fuel that we need. And where are we going to get it? We don't want to eat protein because it doesn't have a drug-like effect. You know, it has a nice effect, and it doesn't generate bad moods or cravings, but it doesn't do enough for us when we're so depleted. And we're used to having the drug effect of junk food. So we bring in the single nutrient that the body can derive from protein. It's called tryptophan. And it's an amino acid that the brain converts immediately into serotonin. So that suddenly it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon or 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock and we're dying to leave work so that we can get something, you know, whether it's a drink or some candy or an ice cream cone or whatever. And suddenly we don't want that. And we're thinking about, you know, I'd kind of like chicken tacos tonight with, you know, guacamole and plenty of lettuce and let's get the ingredients and go home and make it. So literally as fast as I described that process, that's how long it takes. Take it out of the container, put it in your mouth, drink it down with water, and within just a few minutes, the brain is transformed. The brain doesn't need, you know, endless amounts of it, just enough. And so then we have 4 hours of sanity in that department of the brain. We aren't irritable. We're not self-critical. We're not worried about the future. And we're not struggling not to eat junk food. We're free of all of that.
Which is really remarkable, because from the mood, I remember that being the center for also depression, and I'm sorry for butting in. But that's also the center that, you know, was responsible for depression. And then, you know, when we start drawing the parallels between the two conversations, which I guess I'm going to have to do at some point throughout today's podcast, it's really remarkable just to sort of see how the brain, through the lens of the diet cure and the craving cure, it has this natural wanting to restore its, like, it comes back to homeostasis. It wants to restore itself, and it's reaching for synthetic things that it think will support it, and it's producing those in forms of cravings, and we're just somewhat involuntarily responding to those and reaching for these synthetic things to then, like, try and consume those, and the brain and the mind is doing that. And if we can just go, actually, what it's actually seeking through the awareness of what we're sharing today is this particular molecule, particular amino acid, and just give it that, all that frazzle noise seeking, like all that stuff that comes from there can just be laid to rest, and we can move forward in a much more, I want to use the word enlightened way, but because you mentioned serotonin and light, but yeah, you know, in a clearer way is probably the more apropos.
I like it, and that's something that we're going to be talking about perhaps next time, is the inner light and what it has to do with these five key brain functions.
Yeah, the spiritual aspect of where we go through here. So. The second amino acid and the second brain center, Yeah.
Okay. The second brain center that I'm going to describe right now is, you know, I'm choosing it because it's the first or second most important neurotransmitter when it comes to appetite. So this is the area of the brain that produces endorphin. And endorphin is our natural joy, happiness, sensual pleasure. And so it's natural that we would get a lot of endorphin activity when we're eating. So we're eating something and we taste it, we smell it, we've anticipated it. It satisfies us in all kinds of healthful ways. And so it can be thrilling. And we've been creating cuisines worldwide, you know, with no junk food that have thrilled us daily. So how do we deal with a brain that isn't producing much endorphin? So ordinary food doesn't do it anymore. And we've lost the cues. You know, what should I be eating? I don't know, because the only thing I want to eat is something that's going to give me a big endorphin high. I'm going to feel, yes. Some of our clients say that there are certain junk foods that are their best friends. So that the idea of giving them up is intolerable. And so we say, don't worry, don't give them up until you've built up your natural inner source of that kind of pleasure. And that kind of inner pleasure comes from, actually, it takes quite a few amino acids to make endorphin. It's a very fancy neurotransmitter, but there's only one that we need to raise levels in minutes. The way I explained, tryptophan will raise the levels of serotonin in minutes. And this amino acid is called D-phenylalanine. Actually, there are two forms of it. D-phenylalanine or DL-phenylalanine. The reason that the book is here is that if you don't know what I'm talking about, you can go right to the book and it'll explain it, what these two amino acids do.
And I will put a link to the book in the show notes below for those that want to check out a written version of it. Yeah.
Great. So a few minutes after taking the food that will create our natural pleasure and joy, in this case, in our meal, we're ready for it. We have lost the chocolate craving. Chocolate specifically goes into that endorphin receptor and cranks it up very temporarily. Some of the other foods that do that directly drive us towards certain foods, gluten raises endorphin levels. So breads and pastas and donuts and bagels. And so if you see yourself as a wheat junkie, a dough lover, there's a real reason for it. There's something very specific about that particular grain that stimulates the endorphins in a drug-like way. Some people find that same kind of thing in milk products. So there's the ice cream people in particular, because there's a protein in dairy products. There are a lot of cheese lovers that also experience this incredible draw to something that has cheese or cream, milk products, because they target again the endorphins. They raise the endorphins right away, briefly, but in a powerful way that sort of dims our appetite for anything else. So,
random question there. Sorry to derail us and put us on a bit of a tangent just momentarily. Is it that these original foods of wheat and cheese and the dairies actually provided us this amino acid in a really robust way if our food processes weren't compromised the way that they are, and that's why we reach for them? Or is it that these foods weren't ever really aligned to supporting our nutritional well-being.
Well, when we developed about 20,000 years ago, we began to not just be omnivores living off of the land. We started to cultivate plants and we started to herd animals, but we did both so that we were growing carbohydrates, you know, starches like beans and grains and so forth. And we were also eating the herd animals. So we had plenty of protein along with this carbohydrate, and we knew how to balance it because our instincts, our feeding instincts, are excellent when the brain is operating properly.
Brilliant. Thank you. Sorry, bringing you back in off the tangent. Yeah. So the second one is D-L-phenylalanine. Can you say that properly? I always say it wrong because it's such a long word.
Phenylalanine.
Phenylalanine. There we go. Wrapped my tongue around it. Yeah, and widely available and super supportive. And you said it was available. It's present in gluten. It's present in dairy. Are there other places that it's present?
The amino acids are not present, particularly in gluten, especially, and not so much in dairy. It's the endorphin receptor in the brain that can be stimulated Triggered. In a drug-like way by those particular foods, and also by chocolate. So instead of providing nourishment, they provide a temporary drug-like experience as if we've had enough endorphin, you know, provided to us normally. And the real problem with that drug-like temporary pleasure that's elicited is that it causes the brain to then crave more because the effect wears off. And then we need more of that drug-like effect. So we go back, you know, to maybe we've had plenty of bread at breakfast and lunch, and then at night we have pasta. You know, then we get the hit three times that day. I hope I'm being clear about the difference between the neurotransmitters which our brain makes out of the amino acids and the amino acids themselves that we're going to use to restore the neurotransmitter function so that we can enjoy real food.
Yeah, it is making sense. So we are actually craving this particular neurotransmitter, and in order to, but we get triggered to sort of seek that in particular foods. Those foods aren't the original source of actually getting that that amino in. And so we will run rampant and we will try and get as much of that in as possible to try and satisfy our craving when really, yeah, if we could just supplement this amino, things can settle in the mind and we can not be so frantically craving things.
Well, the frantic craving, maybe we should pause for just a second so that people get a chance to think about whether it's their fault that they've been eating foods that they haven't wanted to be eating, perhaps for years and years and years. And this brain neurotransmitter stimulation by junk food is powerful and it's completely unknown to you. You know, the food industry does not want us to know what they are doing to our brains. So we blame ourselves and they say, well, we don't make you eat this stuff, but they do. The food science has been fine-tuning this this effect for decades now.
Hey, your Inspired Tribe, I want to take a quick sec. I wanted to share something today with you that is really dear to my heart, and it's actually what keeps the entire ecosystem around the Inspired Evolution thriving, my one-on-one coaching. So it's basically coaching that helps you live a spiritually aligned life. I coach people from all different types of walks of life. These people are leaders and they're looking to have an incredible spiritual impact in the lives that they're leading for themselves, and then also lead in alignment to their values. Now, you don't have to take my word for it. Here's a few people that have also transformed through my coaching, and here's what they have to say.
Amrit is a fantastic coach.
In a few sessions, he got to a depth that I'd only experienced before working with certain medicines.
He's gone through a lot of the struggles that you're probably facing.
Then my corporate banking job wasn't really doing it.
You feel like you're not making progress towards your goals.
And Amrit's been a really strong, supportive figure in my journey.
I'm more in control of myself.
I'm kinder to myself.
I actually have that vision and a purpose.
I do feel like I'm a better version of myself already.
Amazing energy.
He was easy to talk to, which made me easy to trust him.
Working with Amrit at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and really I was bouncing out of bed.
Whenever I get off the calls with Amrit, best money we've ever spent.
I would not recommend him because I don't want everyone to know about him, and then I won't be able to book him. If he gets too busy, I won't get my turn.
I would say absolutely.
There's no way you can work with Amrit for a period of time without being transformed.
So if you're considering him as a coach, do not hesitate, because you won't be disappointed.
As you guys can see, there's a lot of people all over the world from all these different corners experiencing incredible transformations. I don't think, if I can say humbly myself, that there is anything quite like this somewhere else online. Most people that, you know, have channels that, you know, grow and grow and grow don't really focus on one-to-one offerings. I have just found that it is the most profound space where you can bring yourself in a private container and really just share what's going on for yourself. And if you want to book in for that call with me, touch base, it's www.amrit.coach/life. That's www.amrit.coach/life. There is a link in the show notes below to book in that call. And yeah, if you want to take your journey further, if you want to dive in deeper and you really want to live a spiritually aligned life, if it's for you, please do check it out. And without too much further ado, once again, for your spirit, for yourself, today's podcast. Because that was going to be one of my questions today. How intentionally corrupted is our food?
Well, I think it's entirely intentional. The junk food industry was not so sophisticated, and it was not so successful up until after 1970. I was around, and we had a Coke once a week. That was a treat once a week. We didn't have sweets at all, except for, you know, occasional desserts. Homemade desserts that were full of eggs and cream and nuts and, you know, all kinds of things. And we had one serving, and that was it. We didn't constantly crave. We could have gone out and bought Fritos and so forth. They were there then, but we just didn't want it. So now, since the 70s, when the tobacco industry bought up the snack food industry largely, They already were sophisticated in how to make an edible or smokable, you know, substance entirely appealing. And they used that technology and have been continuing to improve on that technology to make us ever more dependent on these highs that we get from foods, so that we really haven't had a choice. We take one of these two amino acids if we have that particular kind of low endorphin attachment to food, and we lose interest in chocolate. We lose interest in bread. We lose interest in ice cream. It's not an effort. It's gone because our brain is operating normally for the first time in maybe a lifetime. So many people are young enough that they never had the opportunity to eat the way we ate up until the 1970s. There were radical changes in our diet that I can talk about later. But meanwhile, let's go to brain center number three.
Yes, please.
There are lots of people who discovered during COVID, for example, that they overeat and eat foods that they know are not good for them, to deal with stress. And that's because there's this brain center that's designed to relax us. It turns off adrenaline and allows us to sit back and relax under duress even. You know, it's a powerful gift that we're born to enjoy. It's the ability to relax at will. But if we're not eating the kinds of foods that program the brain to make this relaxing neurotransmitter, which is called GABA. We have to relax somehow. And we learn pretty quickly which foods are going to give us a sense of relaxation, however briefly. And different people, you know, have different foods that do that for them. So we call those people, you know, stress cravers. They crave foods, drug-like foods, to calm themselves. Fortunately, instead of having to resort to dangerous junk foods, we have the opportunity to get another amino acid, the only chemical on earth that can relax us, really. And it's a nutrient called GABA that fits right into the relaxing neurotransmitter, also called GABA, producing this instant relaxation. And so suddenly the stress trigger doesn't go on. We don't need whatever food we've been eating to chill out. And we can relax naturally. So now we're free of three of the biggest lures of junk food. So the fourth most common cause of food cravings is a deficiency in an amino acid called glutamine. Glutamine is supposed to be the most abundant amino acid in the whole body, but we're not eating foods that supply it. And so what happens is that we start demonstrating some of the over 20 different adverse symptoms of low blood sugar or hypoglycemia. And when our blood sugar levels, you know, in the bloodstream, especially in the brain, drop too low, desperate cravings for glucose specifically rise up. If we satisfy that need with commercial sweets, we end up jacking blood glucose levels way too high. The pancreas sends out insulin, which lowers the levels of glucose too low, and suddenly we're hypoglycemic again. We don't have enough glucose and we're desperate for something sweet again. In that case, we reach for another nutrient, and that nutrient is glutamine, the amino acid that can convert perfectly and beautifully into exactly the amount of glucose that our brains need at that moment. So it doesn't give us too much or too little, and the effects are almost instantaneous. So we have, you know, thousands really of our food craving clients who recognize that syndrome. They skip a meal, they don't have time for breakfast, and by the time they get somewhere where they can get food, all they want is something sweet. And they really need that. You know, the body gotta have glucose. So they take glutamine with them and it tastes great. They open the capsule in their mouth and instantly that craving is gone. And so they can get to the snack bar and get something halfway healthy instead of what they had intended to get before and get the same relief, only it'll last for hours instead of just minutes. The last of these brain functions that programs its last cravings. It's last because it's a neurotransmitter that stimulates us and gives us energy. And so it's the caffeine, the natural caffeine. And when we don't have time or don't have a taste for food in the morning and we go for coffee instead, again, it jacks the blood sugar up and then down, and then we end up craving sweets. And so we can eliminate that craving right away, first thing in the morning, by having enough of our own natural stimulant. It's an amino acid called tyrosine, another capsule of that. And in minutes, we feel clear, we're focused, we are not jittery, and we do not crave, the scone to go with our Starbucks. So I've taken care of every person who's watching this.
Yeah.
Who's struggled with cravings.
Thank you so much for
this simple.
Yeah, thank you so much for covering that ground up front. The diving back into a few places. So you were discussing GABA, and one of the interesting things I find about that particular center as well is we were discussing the ability to relax. And one of the things I find again and again is just, the Inspired Evolution podcast, we end up having so many conversations around the nervous system. And it just seems like GABA has this real propensity for helping us like regulate emotions, and just how intrinsic our nervous system state is to our experience of reality at any given time and how important it can be to modulate that. Can you speak to GABA and its impact on the nervous system?
Well, there's a seesaw, and one arm is adrenaline, which alerts us to danger, and it can be on the tiniest, in the tiniest measure, nothing really life-threatening, but we look at the clock and we realize, oh, we only have a half an hour to get to work or whatever. And that alters the chemistry of our entire body for that period of time. So what's critical is that there's a balancing chemical called GABA that, as you say, is our natural relaxer. And so they counteract each other and balance each other and allow us to deal with real life problems, but without excessive stress. We can look at the clock and say, oh, I've got a half an hour, I better hurry up. Or we can say, if we don't have enough GABA, I only have half an hour, I'll never make it.
And I love the simplicity with which it boils back down to these five readily available amino acids. The thing I was also going to say about GABA is what we learned in the Mood Cure, and we touched on lightly there, was that and sort of extrapolating the conversation a little bit down a tangent, it was the inherited nature of some of these predispositions for certain craving patterns, like because of certain centers are just naturally more inclined to want to be more seeky. I'm going to use the word seeky. I've just made up a word. But some people are more like, and it became more apparent to me with GABA, which is like some people are just more naturally gifted in the GABA space. Like they're just naturally more relaxed and they've just naturally got GABA centers which produce healthier amount of GABAs. And you can just sort of see that they're a bit more, I don't want to say Rastafarian, but relaxed nonetheless, as opposed to certain people, just significantly more, have a greater propensity to just flick into that adrenaline driven state. And so using that as a bit of a platform to sort of go into, like predispositions, like mental predispositions, do you think we inherit some of this or do we develop this as we go? A bit of both.
Well, I want to try and make this clear again, because most of the people alive right now are too young to have experienced the fact that we didn't have mood problems significantly, and we didn't have food problems because of our mood problems at all for most of our several million years on the planet. Yes, however, there are traits that get passed down. So even in those days, there were people who came from families that were more uptight. They didn't have as much GABA as someone else, but it didn't stop them from enjoying life and doing well and so forth. But there was an atmosphere in the house, whereas other people were, sometimes relaxed to a fault, their house would be a big mess, because, they weren't driven and feeling stressed if things were not organized. So yes, there are weaknesses, vulnerabilities that we have genetically that would make it easier for one center to become depleted as opposed to another. So from the stressed out family, we would naturally become depleted in GABA and look for food that would be calming or drugs that would be calming. And so we would really need that GABA supplementation to support a little bit of a tenuous ability to relax. You know, as I say, you know, before 1970, this was the happy-go-lucky country, you know, can do. And, you know, people really felt that way. When you see pictures, everyone is slender. Everyone is energetic. It's remarkable to look at crowd pictures from before 1970.
What happened then? We've touched on this.
I would love to explain what happened. You know, I'm saying it's not your fault.
Please.
Tobacco industry has designed products that are going to addict you to foods, but really, what happened to make us more vulnerable? Some very significant, you know, the first time in the human race that we had voluntarily limited our intake of basic nutrients happened in the 70s. We were mistakenly guided by the government, which was guided by a few individuals, academics in the nutrition field, who had theories that things could be better than they had been in the last few million years if we would only adjust our diet a little bit. And we were starting to have a heart disease problem. Now that later, you know, hindsight, we realized the tobacco use at that time before the 70s was too high and was contributing to heart disease. But also we found out fairly recently that some of these nutrition experts, academics, were paid to put the blame on fat rather than on sugar for our increasing heart disease problem.
And the problem with that being that sugar is highly addictive and fat is vital for your nutrient delivery mechanisms, right?
That's right. Sugar is entirely extraneous. We don't need it at all. It's pretty much only bad for us. And we weren't that interested in it. We had access to it, table sugar. You know, for over 100 years, we've had access to it, but people just didn't use it that much. They liked it, but...
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
So, when we were told to cut out our fat, which, as you say, is an essential nutrient, and by the way, somehow or another, we were told to cut out only animal fat. And the synthetic fats, which were gathering momentum, were big profit centers because they were very cheap to make, like margarine and like vegetable oil. Mazola, corn oil, you know, was the early proponent. So then not only did we cut back on the amounts, but we cut back on the quality of the fat we were using. And because animal fat, and they were blaming the cholesterol content of animal fat, which now has been exonerated. You know, we didn't have heart disease for 2 million years when we were eating almost nothing but animal fat. So we were told in the 70s that for our health's sake, and somehow we were very easily convinced, we had to cut out the fat and increase carbs. And that so carbs were like the free-for-all zone. Carbs are fine, fats are bad, and protein, you know, the high protein sources are animal derived, and they have some of this cholesterol containing fat, so that they were under a cloud also. So basically we were told carb load. And it was the decade in the 70s where we would get becoming athletic, and we were told that high carb foods, pasta, sugars, whatever, so fat-free cakes and so forth became tremendously popular. And so we gravitated towards sugar. And at the same time, a new sugar was invented and marketed in that same decade that was 10 times more addictive and pleasant than table sugar. And that sugar is called high fructose syrup, you know, either from corn, from fruit, from agave, it doesn't matter where it's from. It is so much more addictive than table sugar. And so we became addicted to it. So we turned to grains and sugars, the high carb foods. And I should mention here, because a lot of people know that there's a question about the gluten content. It's the protein in wheat, you know, so in breads and pastas and so forth. The source of our wheat entirely changed in the 1970s as well. And so it appears that, you know, something that was already very popular became even more compelling. And then there was another factor, and this is something that as spiritually oriented people, we have to struggle with, and that is that we were introduced to vegetarian and vegan diets as both an ethical option and a spiritual option. And there was this burgeoning interest in spirituality around that time too, that has continued. And so we were further encouraged to go towards the carbs and away from the animal protein that we had depended on. So these are some of the key changes in diet that occurred that just pulled the rug out from under our nutritional wisdom, you know, the instincts for what we needed and what our forebears had thrived on. Most people don't even know what their forebears were thriving on now, because now, you know, it's so easy to be a vegan and eat nothing but junk food. And it gets so confusing because you're addicted to the junk food, but you feel a virtue that you're avoiding animal products. And so the whole realm of diet has become a quagmire and so difficult to navigate.
Alrighty guys, and just a quick question for you. Leave a comment below letting me know how your relationship with food is going and what you're learning from this particular podcast when it comes to, yeah, just nutritional voidness of foods. Is this something that's new to you or something you've always known? How do you feel it? What foods support you? I'd love to hear from you in the comments below. Leave me a comment, and that's me writing back to you. Back to today's episode.
It really is a it does feel like a landmine, to be honest, the diet conversation. Whereas the mood conversation we had previously, like I feel like people are open. And it's not that people aren't open around diet, but with mood, people are open to trying and navigating. Like the mental health conversation is becoming part of the zeitgeist. Whereas with diet, yes, there's this, you know, the conversations are just so many in the zeitgeist, and they all seem to like log ahead against each other. There's so much space for like people wanting to just butt heads, like this is right, or this is right, or this is right, or this is right. And I guess just the opportunity, I think that, you know, amino acids are super affordable. You know, they're really easy to take, really easy to access. Like, oh yeah. And it's just, phenomenal to sort of see, hey, just from that point, once you've addressed some of these like mental health centers or mental health, like mental center, brain centers, I should call it, just to sort of see how like, okay, now from this really stable mental place, what do I really crave and need? It's pretty profound just seeing how we could iron out, even just, you know, being a podcast and being online, I just see so much conflict in the diet space. You know, like you said, there are people that are vegan, there are people that are vegetarian, there are people that are keto, there are people that are literally carnivore, you know. And one of the questions that has come through from our audience recently has been carnivore diet. It seems to be trending at the moment, at the time of us recording this podcast.
It's true.
Yeah. And
I had my experience with the carnivore diet a couple of years ago, maybe three. This was a woman who came on a podcast of mine. She had offered to, you know, volunteered to talk about her experience with food craving and food craving elimination. And she had found, she's a very sophisticated woman, had tried a lot of other things, and she found that she was so reactive to so many foods that it was only organic meats that she could tolerate, but that it cleared so much up for her. And so the rest of us, not being familiar with that, were expressing concern for her. You know, well, what about the nutrients you're not getting? So she said, but the animals have nutrients, and I'm using supplements, and it's really, really working for me. And I finally realized it's working for her. Her system at this time needs this. And she is an intelligent and thoughtful person. And I don't know what I'm talking about because I haven't really run into this before. So that gets us back to what's right for each person. It gets us back to our own, these new dietary instincts. You know, we used to go through the forest and know which mushrooms, you know, which berries, at what time, which nuts, you know, what to do with them, acorns, we knew. And of course, it took, I'm sure, a long time for people to sort it out, but there was also an instinct, an intuition about what was right for us specifically. And that's what we have to get back to, is find out what's right for us. So we get a lot of vegans who are really passionate about it, but they're not eating enough food, they're not getting enough protein, they're not getting enough fat, they're getting too much refined plant food. So that plant food on its own, you know, is not necessarily virtuous. Is it the right kind of food for you, and which kinds of plants? So sometimes we rarely get someone who's using beans and nuts and making sure that they get plenty of protein so that those amino acids that are going to feed the neurotransmitter centers of the brain are adequately provided. Mostly they're just eating out, you know. So when they come in and we say, yeah, but you want to eat good food, but you have to have a brain that's operational in order to want and continue to choose those foods. And so here's what you need to do. And we help them to figure out how they can make a vegan higher protein fare. And then over time, as their brain normalizes, you know, optimizes, they'll come to us and say, you know, I was thinking about it, and I'm doing nothing but cooking and soaking and so forth, and it's so that I can get enough vegetable protein. But I realize now that I would be okay to have eggs and fish. Can you help me figure out how I would, you know,
incorporate that in,
the vegetable matter and the animal source protein? So that they're finding their own way and what feels right for them. And they have the capacity to do that. But it's very hard in this culture as you say, of the diet battles and the judgment that we have on each other for what we eat.
Well, even that was one of the questions that popped in, and you've sort of answered it already, was people that were vegan or vegetarian that watched the previous video were like, because you espouse that we stay on the amino acids, and maybe this is worth us discussing here, for like a certain period of time to help you get out of a ditch. Let's just look at it that way. It's a really a ladder out of the ditch. And then, you know, you being able to find really good, robust nutritional choices in your everyday food to be able to support your mood and your diet and your cravings. The vegetarians that were sort of diehard said, hey, like, is there a way that I could just take the aminos for life? And that was one of the questions I was invited to ask you today.
Well, as far as I know, no one has ever tracked people using the aminos long term. We don't recommend it because we don't know. And what we do know is that the aminos are very, very potent. And I ran into a nutritionist fairly recently who read one of my books and decided that she needed one of the aminos. And she'd been taking it for 4 years. And I said, are you having, it was a stimulating one. I said, are you having any trouble sleeping? And she said, well, yes, actually I am. And I said, well, they're not needed by someone like you who eats an adequate amount of protein every day. So you're getting an overdose. So it is possible to overdose on these nutrients. And so for adults, you know, 3 to 6 months, if we're working with someone who comes from an alcoholic family, say, and they've had their own struggle with alcohol or substances, maybe 12 months. But the average is 3 to 6 months for adults. For young children, 2 weeks. So that gives you an idea of the spectrum. So this is a short-term rehab, repair job.
And I think that's important to highlight.
You're not out there hammering in nails the rest of your life in repairing your house, you know.
Well, that's the thing, because I think with diet, there is so much all or nothing as well. And circling back to the carnivore diet, which is one of the things I wanted to talk about, was just, yeah, like it is an elimination diet, whereas so many people are, you know, carnivore for life. And maybe you're entitled to that, and maybe you're getting what you need from that. And like you said, you know, if that's what you feel is right for you, is right for you. It does raise some questions in terms of, you know, and we're sort of dancing around many lines in this conversation today already, is just like what is socially accepted, and maybe just being on purely red meat or like the lion diet alone does socially alienate you to some degree. Even if you try to go out to have a meal with your friends, you know, you may find something, but not always, you know. And so then there's this social aspect of your health, which, you know, traditional Chinese herbal medicine is very aware of, you know, that one of the factors for longevity even is like the strength of your social connections. And so, you know, there's a many different conversations that open up in and around what is fundamentally an elimination diet. And how long you should be eliminating all other foods for is probably a question I wanted to sort of just get your thoughts on, you know, like how long do we eliminate things for? If you know, amino acids, we supplement for 3 to 6 months to bring ourselves back to a really robust place of homeostasis, you know, something like a carnivore diet, which surely works, you know, works wonders, especially because it's like ketosis on steroids. It brings you back into burning fat rather than sugars, and it can be so healing for your body, your psychology, burning ketones, like clear thinking. It's amazing. But ultimately, it is an elimination diet, which is you're eliminating a lot.
What means that you want to reintroduce one thing at a time and see how you do. You know, if you've adapted to a carnivore diet, you're not in a hurry to get off of it. You know, you have the latitude to try whatever you are drawn to. You know, like, I would like to have some vegetables, or I'd like to have, you know, some sort of vegetable matter, plant-based. I'm really feeling the need for nuts. Okay, try one type of nut and try it for 3 days. and then go off of it. And so that's how we reintroduce, is just one thing at a time. But you're right. It's carnivores tend to congregate together because of the very thing you're talking about. They're not rejected by people who have found, you know, that this is helpful for them. But once we get rid of the cravings, we haven't often found, you know, that we need to narrow the diet that much. What we do as a preliminary step in trying to help people decide, you know, what kinds of foods to replace their junk food diet with, is to ask them to find out, if they don't already know, what their blood type is. So the original ancient blood type is type O. That is, a Paleolithic original blood type from a time where we were eating lots of animal protein, and we find absolutely, almost universally, the type O's thrive on animal protein and vegetables and do poorly on and don't digest nuts, seeds, legumes, you know, beans and peas, or grains very well. But they're fine on nuts and seeds usually, and fruit as well as vegetables. But type A is the other most common blood type, which is, you know, a hunter-gatherer is type O, and the herder-planter, the last 20,000 years, mostly type A. And they are able to eat a wider and digest a wider variety of foods. But of course, they also ate meat. So it was a combination, but they were able to tolerate and adapt to some of these foods that weren't, you know, naturally available in the wild. So,
and type B, can I ask about it just before we venture off?
Wish I knew. We just never see a type B or a type A B.
Okay.
And, so if you look at the books on diet and blood type, there is some information, but it's sort of meager and not very clear. Again, you know, we resort to elimination and challenge. You know, let's start with the things that you know you can tolerate well, and then experiment with adding in. So some people say that bees and ABs don't do so well with poultry. I don't know if that's true or not, but I don't know that anyone is really knowledgeable about those two blood types, the most modern of the blood types. We can go to the traditional diet of our forebears. So when we get somebody who comes to our virtual clinic, you know, we're going to find out, what was the diet? You know, what's your ethnicity? Where were you, you know, where did your family come from? What kinds of foods did they adapt to? Let's model, you know, so we get lots of people who are from the Orient, and, you know, rice and is animal protein in small amounts usually is all they can find. Lots of vegetables. And of course, soy has been integrated into that, you know, more recently. But we find just about universally that if they come from that diet, you know, the first thing we ask them, well, is, are you eating it? No. When did you stop eating it? About the time that they became addicted to junk food. And so when we can stop the cravings, that's the diet that we recommend they go back to. And they are almost always really satisfied with that.
That's profound, because when it comes to diet, I've had a look at my own lineage, let's put it that way. I'm Indian by heritage, and in the Indian cuisine, arguably, I would say inarguably, but I'll be appropriate and say arguably is the yummiest in the world. I don't want to alienate any of my European or South American friends here. But yeah, the Indian diet, and, you know, looking at some of its origins, was, you know, so much spice was put into the foods to actually help water retention, because there was not as many pure water sources in the region when the diet was actually constructed by emperors at the time, who were aware that they needed populations to be able to survive on only infrequent, like less frequent access to water. And so this diet, which was rich in herbs and spices, was created. When you think about how much, like, even they say in your water, you should add a little bit of salt, so your body actually absorbs it and retains it, rather than just using water without salt, without minerals, which just actually serves as a flushing mechanism. So, and then also looking at just the Indian subcontinent and how there's been times of massive famine and then massive feast, and massive famine and then massive feast, again due to the nature of the rivers and just the climate and the ecosystem, and then how the bodies have adapted to be intentionally, like, their response to insulin is not the same as that of like a Western European, right? Because what goes on in there is they generally would, they when they eat a little bit, their insulin is like, okay, they pack on weight around the midriff faster, so that there will be a time of famine, at which point I'm going to need these resources. And so then you know, there'll be a time where they lean out. And as you mentioned earlier, now that we're flush with the way resources move around the planet, 70 to 80% diabetes in these areas, you know. And, you know, fasting is a wisdom that now comes from India and travels all around the world, but sometimes is not adopted in India, it seems, touch wood, in some ways. And yeah.
You know, there, you're leaving out one thing, and you may be doing that on purpose, and forgive me if I bring it up and you don't want to talk about it, but there's also the what I would call the folk tradition of avoiding beef and beef products. And so there's something I talk about in the craving cure. Beef is has a particular type of iron and zinc, critical minerals, that's very easily absorbed, much more easily than any other form. It's called heme, H-E-M-E. It's from blood, as in hemoglobin. And so the redness is the iron in red meat. And so because there was this decision, this cultural decision to avoid it, there is a very strong propensity for various levels of iron deficiency and anemia, some very, very severe and some marginal. But wherever they go with that eating tradition, whether it's Europe or wherever they move or stay, there's that tendency, which is unique, really, in the world, I think.
Hey, your Inspired Tribe. I want to take a quick sec. I wanted to share something today with you that is really dear to my heart. And it's actually what keeps the entire ecosystem around the Inspired Evolution thriving, my one-on-one coaching. So it's basically coaching that helps you live a spiritually aligned life. I coach people from all different types of walks of life. These people are leaders and they're looking to have an incredible spiritual impact in the lives that they're leading for themselves, and then also lead in alignment to their values. Now, you don't have to take my word for it. Here's a few people that have also transformed through my coaching, and here's what they have to say.
Amrit is a fantastic coach.
In a few sessions, he got to a depth that I'd only experienced before working with certain medicines.
He's gone through a lot of the struggles that you're probably facing.
Then my corporate banking job wasn't really doing it.
You feel like you're not making progress towards your goals.
And Amrit's been a really strong, supportive figure in my journey.
I'm more in control of myself.
I'm kinder to myself.
I actually have that vision and a purpose.
I do feel like I'm a better version of myself already.
Amazing energy.
He was easy to talk to, which made me easy to trust him.
Working with Amrit at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and really I was bouncing out of bed
whenever I get off the calls with Amrit. Best money we've ever spent.
I would not recommend him because I don't want everyone to know about him and then I won't be able to book him. If he gets too busy, I won't get my turn.
I would say absolutely.
There's no way you can work with Amrit for a period of time without being transformed.
So if you're considering him as a coach, do not hesitate because you won't be disappointed.
As you guys can see, there's a lot of people all over the world from all these different corners experiencing incredible transformations. I don't think, if I can say humbly myself, that there is anything quite like this somewhere else online. Most people that, you know, have channels that, you know, grow and grow and grow don't really focus on one-to-one offerings. I have just found that it is the most profound space where you can bring yourself in a private container and really just share what's going on for yourself. And if you want to book in for that call with me, touch base, it's www.amrit.coach/life. That's www.amrit.coach/life. There is a link in the show notes below to book in that call. And yeah, if you want to take your journey further, if you want to dive in deeper and you really want to live a spiritually aligned life, if it's for you, please do check it out. And without too much further ado, once again, for your spirit, for yourself, today's podcast.
We're discussing human ancestry. Use that as a bit of a segue also to dive deeper into like animal ancestry or plant ancestry, food ancestry is kind of what I'm trying to get to, is because a lot of the people that are proponents back to the carnivore diet, this is where I first started hearing this, is like they're like, oh, it's important. Some of these people that are evangelizing certain diets in this space that that actually some of them chose not to be a carnivore. It just seems to be that the choices among the other food groups are so heavily compromised with modern food production practices, and the soils and the nutrients are so stripped and so devoid of the actual substrate of what makes a human being, that beef seems to be this last place. Some say largely potentially due to the fact that the cow has two stomachs. I don't know why, but that beef seems to be this last place where they can really drive all the nutrients that they need from a particularly rich food source. And it seems to be this ace in the hole or one last Hail Mary or like a blessing given today's food production practices. That seems to be an argument that's made for some of those people that are proponents of that particular diet and lifestyle that stay on it long term, that say all the like many of the other food sources are compromised. Like you said, you know, back to the 70s, like sugar was made into, you know, this real, it was a real drive for it, and we can, you know, probably extrapolate from our conversation today that profits drove that conversation to a significant degree. But then also some of the, there are other things that, you know, sort of concern this conversation, I guess, just the fact that our soils aren't as nutrient dense as they used to be. So the things we grow in them behave sort of differently as what they grow. And then also, I don't want to get too conspiratorial, but, you know, some of the organizations that sell us our multivitamins are also the same organizations that also help us farm and support our farming practices. It can be kind of a bit of an interesting loop to consider, touch wood. All of that to sort of say the ancestry of our food has changed a lot in the last 50 to 100 years in terms of how it's grown and what it's grown in and how its nutritional profile may not be what the ancestor of that food was hoping to support us with, right?
Yes. You're very right. And
there's a big sigh there, sorry.
It's one of the reasons that nutrient supplements, specifically these amino acids, are so critically important, because we're not getting them in the food we're eating for one reason or another. Either, you know, a food eating style that we've committed to, or the actual composition having deteriorated because of our farming practices. Before we go into a profound depression about the possibilities or the impossibilities of ever recovering from our current farming practices, I would just like to say that this simple process of restoring the five neurotransmitters allows us to eat the best possible food. And what we've actually seen in over 6,000, 7,000 cases is the immediate loss of craving for the foods that are frankly, and you know, researched to be 60% nutrient void and the rest of it is toxic calories. It's a huge improvement. The worst, you know, grains grown in the worst soil as a side dish to vegetables and protein is a huge advance over an entirely junk food diet. And that gives us some hope so that we can take another step and say, well, we're going to support the organic food. We're going to be very careful where we get our food and what they do with the land. And it's quite true that when people do come to their senses, literally, when the five senses are restored, they look around and realize, you know, they're still interested in diet and food and nutrition. You know, they're like you. They're looking and seeing, you know, these fundamental dangers and that there may be something we can do and before it's too late.
There's a whole rabbit hole we can go down, and I'm conscious of how much time we have left, but the cravings also don't just extend to food. They extend to things such as alcohol, other drugs as well. And there's been massive success rates with your work. Well, some of the studies with adopting your work and
not adopting. How I discovered the work was with alcohol addicts. I would never have known about it if I had not, as a psychotherapist, run into a brick wall where my alcohol in a treatment program where nobody was recovering, which is pretty much the situation universally now. And the amino acids and their effect on the neurotransmitters, it is remarkable for any kind of addiction, whether it's to sugar or to cocaine or to opiates or alcohol.
And it might be somewhat alarming for people to hear you lump sugar in with cocaine, opiates, and alcohol in that bucket.
Well,
but you don't do that lightly.
1970, but it's changed. This food is not the same food. We are not in any way eating the same diet that sustained our health for 2 million years prior. It's drug substance. In acute package, you know. Great advertising. It's fun. It's snacking, you know, it's crunchy. It's whatever. It's really drugs wrapped up in cute packaging. And I'm a drug addiction expert, you know, a world expert. I developed the first adolescent treatment programs for adolescents who are addicted. So I came in at the very beginning of addiction treatment, and I have seen how unsuccessful it is in most cases in conventional programs, which are fine, except they miss the nutritional repair that's needed. And so maybe we can talk about that. But in my book, The Mood Cure, there is a whole chapter on that. I call it the nutritional rehab.
The challenges that we've got seem to be quite robust, but also, again, the solution being so somewhat simple. And it's quite profound to sort of feel into even things like, because alcoholism has ruined many families and many lives, touch wood, just as one example, right? There are so many other things we could discuss. But when you start to sort of see that, yeah, there are just centers of the brain that are actively seeking and craving elements from nature that they're not actually getting, and if we can just supplement that back in, we end up in this really wholesome place. And then the proposition here is that going through a protocol for 3 to 6 months of supplementing with these aminos, things recover back to a normal baseline. And from there, intuitively, you make more responsible decisions for yourself, correct?
Yes, effortlessly. It's who you are. You want to take care of yourself. You want the best thing. And you feel good enough that you can do without, you know, the extras. So life is fun on the aminos.
And then I guess we touched on it a little bit earlier. Once we've sort of moved our way, supported ourselves and popped ourselves through with the amino practices, generally each person's diet will be unique to them in terms of where they land, what works for them. Are there some sort of rules of thumb, if you will, that you espouse for people on the other side of the amino treatment therapy when they land squarely on their own feet and are no longer craving bad foods as intensely?
Yes, I do espouse whatever dietary tradition your forebears thrived on. The craving cure is all and entirely about the cravings for food and what proportion of our diet needs to be protein, how we can correct the aberrations in our macronutrients, our basic foods that occurred, you know, in the 70s. What does that mean? We have to increase the protein proportion and the fat proportion and decrease the carbohydrate proportion and improve the quality, overall quality of those three foods. You know, our diet is just made out of three things: protein, fat, and carbohydrate. That's it. So it's not terribly complicated. You know, we know what we were eating then, we know what we're eating now, and we know how to make that adjustment. And past that, it's our individual taste and our heredity. You know, what kind of spices we like in our protein, carbohydrate, and fat diet.
Yeah, thank you very much for holding space for all my spices that I love, the spice of life. I do wonder if that's just inherited or if it's something I've actually got, the spice for life. Yeah, probably a bit of both. To ask you a question about some of the promising things you're seeing in the world now, because this conversation that you and I are having are probably a symptom of things already arcing and shifting and penduluming back towards better food practices in the world. Are you supported, enthused, inspired by certain things that you're seeing towards shifts towards nutritional awareness?
You know, I can't say that I am, because of this tremendous battlefield that nutrition has become. You know, there's so little consensus on what is the best way to grow things and the best things to grow and the best diet to have. So I don't know whether you're familiar with the Weston A. Price Association. It's entirely based on the principle of returning to traditional foods. And it was created by a scientist named Weston Price, who traveled the world and watched literally as primitive peoples who were in very good health, except for infectious disease, you know, like the rest of the planet, developed first crooked teeth and then obesity and degenerative diseases as their diet changed, specifically as their diet changed, and how we could restore that traditional health by getting back to the traditional diet our forebears thrived on. And they have followers all over the planet and large conferences, lots of you know, web material. And I have been so struck. I speak at their conferences. I have spoken at their conferences regularly, and some of my talks are on my YouTube channel. And I've been so struck by the people that I've met there. None of them need me. They don't need the amino acids. These are people who've been able to choose the traditional foods and stick with them for the most part. And they restored themselves. So I align myself with those people and in that that way of approaching diet, and I recommend it, you know, to you and to your listeners.
For those that want to find out more about cravings, mood, diet, best place to uncover your work, Julia, best place to go deeper?
Well, because of you, hundreds and hundreds of people are arriving at my YouTube channel and watching the live trialing sessions where people actually, volunteers are actually given the supplements that they seem to need, the amino acids they seem to need. And you can see on camera
before and after. Yeah.
And then there are lots of, as I say, my talks posted there as well. My most recent book is The Craving Cure. And it's got all the most recent versions of everything that I recommend, so that people can individualize their own programs. So it starts with a questionnaire so that you can identify which part of my brain of these five parts is malfunctioning. And then really there are only two how-to chapters in the book. You don't have to read the whole book. It's full of great information, but forget it. Just get the aminos organized and then come back later and read the rest of it.
And I really, like, there's a lot of, I'm just going to call it, there's a lot of self-help books, which, you know, you have to read from cover to cover. And, you know, especially today's attention spans, which, well, maybe there's an amino acid. That as well. I'm jesting. Oh, shut up. But there's, like, the way the books are written, the mood cure, the diet cure, the craving cure, like, the questionnaire is in, like, the first chapter, if not the second, and you quickly go through, and it's very easy to self, like, quickly reflect through. So you give yourself a scoring system and you basically get, yep, these are the ones. And even the way you describe it is like, just if there's a few that you're running low on, just look at the one that's you got the highest ranking out of against the baseline that was normalized, and just address that one first. Like, don't cook your grits, right? Just work with the one. And that literally means just reading, once you've done that, one chapter or two chapters. And that is such, like, it's just so approachable. Like, the way the books are, all of that to sort of say the books are written with, you can see the actual depths and breadths of your clinical experience come through in the way that you've written the books. It's very, like, targeted, very short, sharp and shiny. You get, like, this will get you through the next little bit. This will get you through the next little bit. And like you said, you can come revisit the questionnaire once you've sort of gone through and, you know, addressed something. And it's so, you know, it may sound counterintuitive. It's like, hey, get a book. You may not need to read the whole thing, you know, but it's like targeting the problem and the solution, like, so well. And yeah, I'm a big fan of the way the books are written. All of that to say, thank you for the way you've written the books, actually. It just makes the content so accessible.
Well, I've enjoyed writing them all, but you know, we have to give people a break. The questionnaires are on the website. There's one website that has all three books on it. There's information about the virtual clinic and the questionnaires, so that you can, you know, today identify what's the priority. You know, if I'm going to do anything, where would I start? And don't feel, you know, you're right. Don't feel you have to do it all. Just changing one of the five will be significant and will give you, you know, a leg up. You know, you've lopped off a fifth of your cravings or more. Now you can turn to another one, you know, and build on that.
And therein lies one of the things I'll put in the show notes as well, is a link to the
website.
Yeah, and the assessment. The assessment particularly for people to be able to go and assess themselves if they're so inspired.
There's an assessment for the food cravers that's a little different than the assessment for the mood troubled, but they're essentially the same questionnaire. I've just given a lot of extra detail in the two separate ones.
And therein lies the profundity of, you know, where we've started today's conversation and we've circled back, is, again, for me, it was like I came to your work through the mood cure, having worked with so many people, especially spirituality and mental wellness seem to have this real Venn diagram of overlapping spaces in there. You know, people having been through traumas, challenges, healing, and they sort of, you know, like being able to supplement correctly and go, oh, yeah, like my mood's improving. I've actually got the bandwidth to be able to sort through some of my stuff emotionally. And, yeah, it's been quite profound, you know, having been a coach and having recommended your book to many people and then obviously being so inspired to get you on the show and then feeling that ripple effect go even further. And also, you know, my own practices in my own life, you know, the supplements have been nothing short of remarkable in the way they've supported mood. And so all of that to sort of say, yeah, it still blows me away. Again, where we started today's podcast, like we've got mood all the way over here, you know, drug, alcohol, like cravings all the way over here. And we've potentially got, you know, food and, you know, everything nutritionally going on over here. And they seem so far apart in, I don't want to say the layperson, but kind of the layperson's mind before they start approaching this work. And then as soon as you start to like dive deeper here, it's like, oh, it's really simple. These are your five brain centers. These are the five aminos that you need. And it's like, oh, and then all of that, like my mood is connected to my food, my cravings, and you start to really see just emotional regulation, you know, and that's kind of one of these things that I've been finding myself saying on the podcast as well, is again and again these days after becoming a father, is really that's what separates the boys from the men or the girl from the women, is your ability to emotionally regulate, right? Like I look at my child and there's very little emotional regulation available there, which is totally fine. Yeah, he's not meant to be able to emotionally regulate. But then there's points where his lack of emotional regulation is triggering my lack of emotional regulation. And I'm like, I'm just being a big kid. And I'm like, what's going on here? It's like, oh, I've got some stuff to work on. And it's like, right, you know, and the ability to not just be a kid in certain instances. Some instances, perfectly perfect, touch wood, to be a kid with a kid. But in other instances, you know, to not, I don't want to say decompose or digress, like, you know, to, yeah, just basically de-evolve in a moment and just realize, oh, actually, I am the adult in this situation, touch wood, and being able to have that emotional levity or, you know, altitude, let's call it that, yeah, really comes back to being able to be in a really whole place, which, again, I'm hoping this podcast, touch wood, really is an ode to for so many others as well. And all of that to say, I know we've left many stones unturned in today's conversation. Even, you know, we tangented out off GABA in some ways. We didn't really get to even discussing glutamine and the way that it can heal your gut lining and stuff like that. There is so much around gut health. We talked previously around, you know, even before we went live today, like serotonin actually has like a spiritual connotation around as well. Like, you know, and there's light that it can bring into your body, and like there's spiritual connotations to GABA as well. There's so many stones left unturned. I'm hoping you'll be gracious enough to visit us again on the podcast. So, yeah. And, but all of that to say thank you also for today's conversation and just, yeah, sharing yourself so abundantly and so graciously with us here. Thank you. Really means a lot to us. Not just for the, you know, quick hour that you've shared with us today, but also it's a lifetime's worth of work that informs this conversation. I'm just really grateful for the work you've been championing for so long. Mm.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for tuning into this amazing episode of The Inspired Evolution. Without you, The Inspired Evolution tribe, this podcast would not be what it is today. Thank you so much for your love and your support. Thank you so much for being so inspired to evolve. It's truly inspiring. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to The Inspired Evolution on YouTube, the home of The Inspired Evolution's video podcast. We release inspiring conversations such as this every week, along with guided meditations and empowering insights, all designed to help you grow and evolve. Honestly, your subscription on YouTube to the channel helps us out a great deal. And one of the other benefits, if you're having any insights or shifts from these episodes that you want to chat about, or if you'd like to leave myself or the guest a message, please do so in the comments on YouTube. I truly look forward to hearing from you. And as always, tribe, remember to stay inspired and keep evolving.
Mom
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.